Joining us now is Robin Wright, distinguished scholar at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., and the U.S. Institute of Peace. She's the author of Rock the Casbah, Rage and Rebellion Across the Islamic World. Welcome, Robin.
Great to be with you.
So do you think what's going on in Iraq right now was absolutely inevitable almost from the beginning in 2003?
No, I don't. I think that there was actually a turning point in 2006, which was really critical. And it was at that juncture when the United States committed to deploy 30,000 extra troops for a surge. There was a big debate in Washington, as there is today, about what the United States could do to reverse what was then a kind of microcosm of what we're seeing today. And that is a militant Sunni insurgency against the Shiite-led government. And at the time, the Joint Chiefs of Staff said to the Bush administration, we are confident that our military forces can achieve our military goals, but what we're concerned about is whether our diplomatic counterparts can get the Iraqi government to agree to a power-sharing arrangement. And what happened was the Joint Chiefs was right. The military forces actually did achieve their military goal, that did push back the insurgency. Al-Qaeda was pushed basically back into the boonies. But the problem was that we never got that power-sharing agreement. So that's the turning point at which we have seen consistent disintegration of the political process.
And so let's explore that a little bit. In a sense, the awakening, the extent to which David Petraeus and the surge strategy was able to reach some sort of an agreement with the Sunni activists and tribal leaders in Fallujah and the Anbar area of Iraq became the seeds of the undoing of Iraq, in the sense that certain kinds of promises were made that at some point eventually power sharing would take place. Maliki didn't deliver on those promises, and the U.S. didn't back up its talk to the Sunnis with any real action. And so, boom, it explodes.
That's right. And then you also have, obviously, the implosion of Syria next door, which gave fertile ground for ISIS to seize territory, to mobilize additional forces both within Syria and from the outside world, and then to turn around and come back into Iraq. And so you have those two factors that were decisive. I mean, one of Prime Minister Maliki's tragic mistakes was that he did not incorporate the Sunnis who fought in the awakening in 2006 and 2007. That's so pivotal to the military success that allowed the United States actually to leave Iraq.
Which he could have easily done. I mean, he could have easily done that. They were ready to go.
That's right. And Iraq is not a poor country. It had the resources to pay these guys, whether it was paying them off, creating jobs for them, incorporating them into rebuilding forces, bringing them into the various levels of security forces. There were many different options. And to say he has blown it would be the understatement of the year.
One of the most dreary sort of illusions of wisdom of being a member of the media is that, you know, you can look in hindsight at events that seem easy to analyze, you know, after the fact. But I have to say, the Washington Post's headline this morning drives me absolutely crazy. White House beginning to consider conflicts in Syria and Iraq as a single challenge. Beginning? Excuse me? That can't possibly be true, is it?
Well, yes, I think it is. Oh. And to a certain degree. And that is that in the past, for the past 2.5-3 years, we've looked at the Syrian conflict as a military challenge. And how do we primarily help the opposition, strengthen the opposition against Assad so that they are not so easily overwhelmed? What we're beginning to look at is the common political problem. And at the end of the day, the reality is that neither crisis is going to be solved militarily. There's no single military option, no single deployment of forces or air power that will turn it around. Both of them ultimately have to be solved politically. And that's, I think, where what people are now beginning to call the Syriac problem begins.
And, you know, the thing that drives me crazy here is that this was something that was really a reality during the 2003 invasion, and in the first 3 or 4 years after the invasion, there were constant issues of militias crossing the border into Syria or crossing from Iraq into Syria, Syria into Iraq. So they've understood that this border was porous and that one side was helping the other side from really the very beginning. Why this should be a surprise is just beyond me.
Well, and the irony is that the Syrian government actually allowed many of the foreign fighters to go into Iraq, and now it's facing a challenge from some of those same foreign forces. But the borders of the Middle East, many of them are porous or ill-defined or arbitrary, imposed by European powers a century ago. And so what we're seeing, besides the immediate crisis, is some real questioning of whether these borders are viable in the 21st century. Are we getting into a situation where you may have to redraw the map?
All right. So three blunt questions before we go. Is this partition, I've been asking everybody this week, are the 300 military advisors being asked to achieve what $12 billion and 11 years of U.S. involvement in Iraq couldn't achieve in this new initiative from President Obama? And is John Kerry going over to Iraq to basically usher Nouri al-Maliki to the sidelines?
John Kerry clearly is going to send a very tough message to Prime Minister Maliki. And I think from President Obama's language yesterday, it's quite clear that the United States would like to see him go. I think a growing number of Iraqis think that he needs to go, that he has been the problem and can't be part of the solution now. In terms of partition, it's very hard to see how Iraq holds together. The longer this battle goes on, the greater the dangers. And the problem for 300 military men is that they're basically being sent across to be babysitters, to try to get the Iraqi army to do what it's supposed to do, to prevent it from fragmenting as the Iraqis try to protect the capital. But that's not going to reverse the tide of the ISIS sweep across the north. And that's a bigger problem, that once you get the political issue solved, then you begin to deal with the military. But Prime Minister Maliki may make this very difficult. And the longer this goes on, the greater the dangers for Iraq itself.
Always great talking to you, Robin.
Thank you, John.
Robin Wright, distinguished scholar at the Wilson Center in Washington and the U.S. Institute of Peace. She's the author of Rock the Casbah, Rage and Rebellion Across the Islamic World.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.